fair to say that this was not a decision by Donald Trump, but this was a decision by a U.S. regime that saw General Soleimani as a very big threat against the hegemonic powers.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think this escalation or this abuses could be pinned on one individual. The United States has been involved in killing millions of people in Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen, Somalia, Syria. It goes on and on and on. The fact of the matter is that this whole process, it's been used not for getting rid of so-called terrorists. The reality is that the terrorists have, if anything, terrorists are being supported by this whole structure. We saw Daesh, how it's being supported, how they were able to sell their oil, how they got all those equipment and material, those cars, and we could go on and on and on. And they admitted themselves, the United States has admitted in highest level that they created terrorists, but their terrorists, to implement their policy. But when you look at the whole spectrum of their policy, death and destruction and creating havoc, creating this an environment where terrorism will flourish is part and parcel of their policy. I think we need to look far beyond one person. We need to look at the whole processes that is taking place. I mean, look, this process started from Israel. The minute they're in trouble, they actually start attacking innocent people in Gaza. You know, the minute they want to sort of have election and they want to show that they are electable, they start killing innocent people. And, you know, so to justify the domestic politics, all you have to do is go around killing innocent people and giving them the spin that you're tough, you're powerful, etc., and you're electable. This sort of procedures, this sort of abuses needs to be stamped out. It's not just individual of Trump. We saw Obama at the first 6 months of Obama's power, when he came to power, he actually used more drones than the previous president
right.
did for a whole 4 years. So really, it goes to the policy, it goes to the direction that international community is going, and the way that you could go around killing innocent people, and they do, and justify it for the by spend.
Oh, thanks, Masoud. Again, viewers, you're looking at live images coming from throughout Iran today, this on the third anniversary of the martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani throughout this week. For days now, we have seen people gathering in Kerman, Iran. Kerman, of course, being the place of where General Soleimani was buried and also his birthplace. And now these images right now that you're looking at from Kerman throughout these several days, that we have seen people coming and going, all wanting to show their respect, to do something. It's been 3 years now since this nation and the resistance and beyond were shocked by what had taken place early morning on January 3rd, 2020. And people now are saying, we haven't forgotten, we won't forget. And they still want the parties responsible, the United States and others, to be held responsible, that Iran and the resistance will hold them responsible, and also saying that they will continue the way of Qasem Soleimani, the resistance, and in general, the way of the Islamic Republic. Going back to Belfast now, Fra, you know, Iran has been under major attacks, of course, for 43 years, but especially this hybrid war that has been taking place for a few months now, trying to show the world basically that Iran has no support inside of the country, that it is detached from its people, that the young people for sure are not following that. And we have seen this morning and throughout this week and really throughout the years of the reality. We've seen so many young people turn out today and throughout these days commemorating the martyrdom of General Soleimani, that they will continue its way. I want to talk about the importance of that because obviously there is a major support for the revolution by a range of ages, but the young people, because it has been the young people, those teenagers and, of course, those in their 20s and 30s who have, for example, fought so bravely in dealing with the resistance, whether we're talking about those who have volunteered to go to Syria or other places to try to help others. The importance of that 43 years on, that it actually has the support that it does, but at the same time, the hegemonic front continues to try to minimize that support and demonize the country as a whole.
Yes, I mean, everything you actually said there, referring to the Iranian revolution and the people of Iran, I just thought of Cuba. I thought of how the young people in Cuba have embraced that revolution, have returned to power, the people who fomented that revolution and the people who led that revolution and the people who were in charge of that revolution. I can only speak as an individual. But if I was a young person and I lived in Iran and I watched what happened in the wider region, I watched what was happening to Syria, continuing to happen to the Palestinians, and I looked at the society that I lived in, if my society, I mean, I was in Syria, I saw Christian weddings and I saw Muslims going to prayer. What I witnessed, I was only there for like 15 days. I was in Latakia in the Palestinian camp on route to Gaza in 2010 with the Viva Palestina aid convoy with George Galloway. I witnessed a unified country where religion and politics did not seem to divide the people. I saw a country which I thought was fantastic. I compared it to my own country and my own society at the time, and I thought, you know, maybe we should be trying to live like the people in West Asia and not live like the kind of so-called civilized Western Christians that we've been brought up to be. So young people in Iran are probably, and hopefully I would like to think, looking at stable society that they're in, the benefits that they are given by their government, the opportunities that they are given by their government, the equality that women enjoy in Iran, which is far superior to the likes of Saudi Arabia. I mean, if people are embracing the Cultural Revolution 43 years after it took place, it proves that the revolution is being contemporized to today. It is as relevant today as it was 43 years ago. If Iran was some kind of a theocratic autocracy, there would be a real revolution in Iran. What we're witnessing with all the people who are attending General Soleimani's memorial today, these people are recognizing his leadership, his sacrifice, and his moral values. They are also relating to the military of today who defend Iran against all internal and external enemies. The people who go to those funerals today are embracing the government and governmental structures that General Soleimani spent his whole military career protecting. So what we have is a relevance that you mightn't see anywhere else outside of Cuba and maybe Nicaragua and countries where revolutions, and I will include Syria. I mean, the Syrian Arab Republic came on the birth of the revolution of a national liberation, and people have to protect the values of the revolution, or you will simply end up back in the same place you were before the revolution started, which is where a small group, an elite group of people, take all the resources, all the money, all the finances, all the power, and they indulge that responsibility for themselves in order to engross themselves, in order to empower themselves to the detriment of the people. Whereas General Soleimani and, by extension, the Iranian government were standing and protecting the Iranian people, and the people who have gone to the funerals, I think, are being reciprocal. They are valuing the sacrifice of General Soleimani, and they are also telling the Iranian military, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and the Iranian government that they stand by them, and that together they will face any challenges that come their way, unified, strong, undivided, and undefeated.
No, thanks so much. I mean, Masoud, we're looking at these live images of viewers. Before I go to Masoud, live images there out of Tehran, and this is a major gathering here in the capital city as people are waiting for the president to address the audience. And, of course, there have been other parts of this program that have been taking place. The main speech, of course, by President Ebrahim Raisi, and we're waiting for that, and we will switch over to cover that speech live. Masoud, you know, when I look at, as we started off, this good and bad and values and the lack thereof, when we're comparing whether we're talking about this front of the resistance and the hegemonic front. We saw recently with the World Cup games, and we saw Moroccans and holding the Palestinian flag, and we saw the team actually, the Moroccan team, and dancing with their mothers. I'm going to stay with Fra, and dancing with their mothers. And then we saw a Danish TV station actually comparing them to monkeys. Fra, what is it? It seems like those things that were valued not only in the East, but also in the West at one point in time, family, mother, parents, stability, just being wholesome, being good, treating each other with respect. It almost seems as that has become a mockery in the West. I mean, when a television program can actually make fun of values, what the West itself, at least the people in the West, stood for a long time. I mean, it just seems that things have become upside down in these secular countries. And there's almost, to be honest, this type of jealousy for those countries or areas that still have these values. I don't know. How do you see it?
Well, firstly, I'd like to say I was in Marrakesh during the World Cup, and I saw the celebrations of the Moroccan people, and I saw several Palestinian flags being carried around the streets when people celebrated the Moroccan football team's victory. I'm going to break down what you said into two separate component parts. One of it is the breakdown of societal values in the West. I can go back to Margaret Thatcher in 1979, and I can go back to Ronald Reagan, where they put consumerism and materialism before the fabric of society and before the family. So they brought in free enterprise. They brought in unrestricted free market controls, or the lack of controls. They introduced a kind of idea into society that we should all be, you know, fighting for ourselves and trying to make our lives individually as good as possible. So they were taking us from a society, which I believe West Asia still extols the virtues and values of the family first. And China is the same, followed by the extended family, followed by local community, followed by society as a whole. And when you put those values first and foremost in the center of the political arena, what you will have is a cohesive society where people look out for each other. Now, when you talk about the comments made by the Danish TV anchor people of the Moroccans and their families looking like monkeys, this isn't new. I can show you cartoons from the 17th and 18th century where Irish people were portrayed as leprechauns, as drunkards, as fighters. They were dehumanized in many respects. So we had colonization, which we spoke about before. This is the neo-colonization. The very fact that people think they can go on national television and disrespect a whole country, its culture and its values, says everything. I will guarantee you it is not jealousy. People in the West do not look at people in West Asia and Africa and think, I would aspire to have their family values. I would aspire to have their societal values. We are propagandized from a very, very young age to believe that white supremacy, the white civilization, that the white man's burden, that Britain didn't colonize every country in the world for 22 in order to steal the natural resources of those countries. It was their job to bring Christianity, to bring faith, and to bring Western civilized values to these, what these we'd call either pagan or some form of backwardness, some form of society where people weren't intelligent, that they were like little children that had to be led, that had to be taught. And when you look at what happened in the Americas, you know, they brought over the Bible when they landed. They brought Christianity, supposedly, to America. They ended up wiping out 100 million plus Native Indigenous people. They took their children and they took them into Christian schools and they forbade them to speak their own language, which similarly happened in Ireland, and that the children were taught European values. They tried to make the Indigenous people of Latin America speak Spanish and speak English and to become Christian and to lose their values and cultural identity. So they're not jealous. This is white supremacism and this is Western, this Western civilized values are being forced onto people and countries and societies and nations that have no cultural affinity to Western ideology. So, you know, I would stand with the people of Iran and the Axis of Resistance as the people who are showing the people in the West how we should live, how we should stand together in solidarity with each other, and how we should end this fracture, this kind of dismemberment of the structures of society, where instead of people living for the common good, people are living for themselves. And in America alone, I don't know the numbers, but are there 1 million plus people living in tent cities? Are there people who have two jobs, who cannot afford an apartment? They go to work in the morning, they come back to their tent, they have something to eat, and they go to a second job. This is how people live in the land of the home and you know, the land of the free, the home of the brave and the land of the free. A million people living in tents in the richest nation in the world, where you have to pay for your own healthcare, and if you have a major surgery, you will either be in debt or you will not be able to get your medicine and get your antibiotics and get your pain relief. It's abhorrent the way Western nations treat their own people, and it's, as I say, it's not jealousy. It is a form of superiority. It's a form of fascism. It's a form of Nazism that we're living with today in Western Europe and in North America, Canada, Australia, etc.
Well, Fry, with being what you've just said, do you think that we will be seeing more blowback by these people themselves in these Western countries as, one, it becomes more and more obvious that the quality of their lives are definitely decreasing as we speak? We have people quite cold in Europe this winter, as you talked about the growing number of tent cities in the United States and other countries. And there are people I believe that the majority of people still in these Western nations believe in those, if you want to say, family values, or believe in the values that we saw more implemented, whether we're talking about 30, 40, 50 years ago. But this extreme secularism that has been forced upon them to separate them from their real values. Do you think that we will be seeing more and more blowback taking place in these nations?
Well, first of all, it depends, excuse me, on your definition of blowback. I don't have a problem with secularism. I think church-state should be separate. Having said that, it's not secularism that is the problem. It is capitalism, and it is neoliberalism, and it is an agenda of everyone having to. There's almost an unspoken rule that it's up to the individual within society to be able to fend for themselves. That's not what government structures are for. That's not what societal structures are for. We're heading back in the West to semi-Victorian times when they had, we have food banks, we have homeless shelters, we have all kinds of. At Christmas here, people celebrate giving the children toys and presents. We have toy banks now where people who are struggling to afford the escalating inflationary prices to keep the home warm and to keep food on the table. We have food banks. We have toy banks for Christmas toys. We have now individual owners of cafes and restaurants opening up their establishments in the morning to allow children to have food before they go to school, because they are going to school hungry. If you go to school hungry, you won't learn anything because you're too busy wondering where your next meal is going to come from. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. There is a huge societal problem here caused by neoliberal austerity and the neoliberal policies that are pursued by the governments, which are to the benefit of the corporations and not to the benefit of the people.
Okay.
And it suits the governments to divide the people and have them fight over the limited resources and blame the refugee or blame the immigrant for the fact that they can't get a hospital appointment or they can't get a council home, when it's the duty and responsibility of the government to provide that.
All right. And on that note, I'd like to thank you, Fra Hughes, for being with us. Journalist, author, and activist out of Belfast, and also Master Chancellor of the Islamic Human Rights Commission out of London. And thank you, viewers, for staying with us today. This is the third anniversary of the martyrdom of General Soleimani. Make sure you stay with us right here at Press TV. We'll be continuing our coverage shortly. Stay tuned.
تمام شد الحمدلله
یه مرحله سختش تمام شد
قاسم سلیمانی یعنی کل محور المقاومه
اسم حاج قاسم سلیمانی آشیانه صهیونیسم تکفیر و نظام سلفه را همینک هم می‌لرزاند
This is Tehran, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Well, we're continuing with our rolling coverage of the third anniversary of the top, third martyrdom anniversary of the top IRGC general, Qasem Soleimani. Very briefly, the huge commemorative events here in the Islamic Republic of Iran in cities like Tehran, Rasht, and Kerman, and we've seen huge crowds of people have gathered in these cities to commemorate and pay homage and respect to the great Iranian general, who did an enormous amount to drive back terrorism in the West Asia region. And I would say that the top Iranian general, very briefly, just let's go through his life. After the victory of the Islamic Revolution in 1979, the young Qasem Soleimani joined the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC. In September of 1980, when the Shah-imposed war on Iran started, the young Qasem Soleimani trained several brigades in the city of Kerman in southeastern Iran, and he sent them to the war front. He became the top commander of IRGC forces in West Azerbaijan province. In the early years of the Islamic Revolution, in 1981, he was appointed as the commander of the 41st Division of the IRGC, the Sarala Division of the IRGC. And during the eight-year war, he became the commanding officer in charge of several important operations, such as the Valfaj 8, the Karbala 4, and the Karbala 5 operations. The huge Karbala 5 operation in particular was the most successful and biggest operation of its kind during the eight-year war. It resulted in a significant weakening of the Ba'athist regime in Baghdad, both politically and militarily. After the end of the eight-year war in 1988, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani returned to the city of Kerman, his birthplace, and he took charge of a campaign against drug trafficking and narcotics. He fought drug smugglers and drug traffickers along Iran's long eastern border with Afghanistan. The drug traffickers were active along Iran's eastern border. In 2000, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, appointed Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani as commander of the elite Quds force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, the IRGC, a position which the top Iranian general held until his assassination and martyrdom by the terrorist U.S. Army in January of 2020. Okay, we now go over live to Press TV headquarters and continue with our live rolling coverage
of you, and I thank you for your kindness and affection. 3 years ago on this day, martyr Soleimani managed to attain his wish, and in order to attain his wish, he traveled in mountains and deserts for 40 years in order to attain this goal. This was a blessing for him and his companions, particularly Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis and martyrs Pur Jafari and Muzaffari Nia, Taremi and Zamani Nia. What has been left behind today is the attitude and the school of thought of this great martyr, this dear martyr. This is something that by paying attention to, one can take steps for the perfection of the Iranian nation and the Muslim Ummah. The best testimony for this school of thought is his divine political will and his bright performance and record. This year, what was most prominent in his will was his expression that he wished to sacrifice his life thousands of times for the sake of others. This indicates the importance of the people in the thoughts of Martyr Soleimani. But today the question is, why was Martyr Soleimani so selfless? You can find the answer in his own remarks, because he considered the nation as a proud nation, as an honorable nation. Martyr Soleimani considered the Iranian nation as a self-sacrificing nation, that in the course of history, particularly during the Islamic Revolution era and the years of Holy Defense, the Iranian people dedicated their lives and properties for the sake of Iran and Islam. and such a nation deserves selflessness and self-sacrifice. What matters today is that all the officials should tread the path of Martyr Soleimani and through self-sacrifice seek to remove hardships, remove the hardships that the people face and create a better tomorrow for the people. And hopefully in this way, we'll be able to meet the people's demands and pave the way for attaining divine satisfaction.
صمیمانه سپاسگزارم از یادگار گرانقدر سپهبد شهید حاج قاسم سلیمانی
thank
سرکار خانم زینب
سلیمانی Ms. Zainab Soleimani, the daughter of Martyr Soleimani. In a few moments, I will invite the President of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Ayatollah Raisi, to address the participants at this commemorative event marking the martyrdom anniversary of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. And we have guests from more than 100 countries who have attended this event. President Raisi, we will never forget this, that when you were the custodian of Imam Reza, peace be upon him, and you were just dusting the holy shrine and you were removing the dust at the holy shrine, and you invited Haj Qasem to enter the shrine and we saw Martyr Soleimani there. We will never forget those moments, and we can remember the tearful eyes of Haj Qasem while removing dust at the holy shrine. Now I would like to invite President Raisi to address the participants. Please recite a salawat. May God protect you and may God support you all in the name of God, the Merciful, the Compassionate.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen.
Praise belongs to God Almighty and salutations to the Prophet of Islam and his pure household.
Allahumma البلد الطيب يخرج نباته بإذن ربه. یاد و خاطره شهید بزرگوار.
I commemorate the renowned and great martyr, the anti-terror icon and the anti-hegemony icon. I salute his lofty soul and I wish to thank the Iranian nation, particularly the youths, for commemorating our national hero. I thank them all as the servant of the people. It goes without saying that commemorating the national hero and the Muslim Ummah hero is tantamount to safeguarding all divine values. Commemorating Martyr Soleimani as the global icon of combating terror and hegemony is tantamount to dignifying all the good things, that is, praising one's dedication and at the same time voicing hatred towards tyranny and hegemony and the global arrogance. So this is not an ordinary commemorative event. It's not an ordinary presence. In other words, it conveys a message It's a message conveyed to all freedom seekers in the world that through resistance and steadfastness in the face of hegemony and oppression, one will be able to block the path before tyrants and oppressors. And it's a message for all the tyrants and oppressors and the global arrogance that you are going through declining circumstances that will lead to destruction and there are people who seek new developments and they are the ones who seek righteousness. It's a message of hope and frustration. It conveys both the message of hopefulness and frustration and despair. On the one hand, we are sorrowful because we have lost a great man. On the other hand, we see that the hearts of Muslims have been wounded because of losing a great commander and a person dedicated to the revolution and our Islamic land. And on the other hand, we are honored. We are proud that he was a personality that, in addition to the Iranian people, he also thought about other nations and he thought about liberation for all people. I want to shed light on the personality of Haj Qasim Soleimani based on the concept of development based on the enlightening verses of the Noble Quran. This is something that everyone is obligated to. That means that one should think about new developments. That means to make progress and to improve and to have a better performance compared to the past. Based on Islamic narrations, the 2 days of a Muslim person must not be the same. That means that his life must improve, and that one should tread the divine path. Every person goes through many developments. And the first point about Martyr Soleimani is his personal progress. And he sought to actually self-actualize in order to contribute to the building of a good society. The person must take steps in order to seek divine proximity. Otherwise, he will not be able to turn into an influential figure in human society. And all the prominent figures, they tread the path of self-actualization. That means to seek divine virtue. That means a virtuous person can turn into an influential figure in the society. And that was something performed by Martyr Soleimani. He loved God, the Prophet's household, and Siddiqi Tahiri. So it was his dedication to God and the Prophet's household, the Ahlul Bayt, that contributed to his spiritual progress. That was something emphasized by our Imam. I'm addressing the young people. Take a look at what the Imam said, and also the guidelines by the leader calling for action to seek divine virtue. The second point with respect to Martyr Soleimani's tradition was that he was at the time of the glorious Islamic Revolution. And Martyr Soleimani's school of thought is in line with Imam Khomeini and Imam Khamenei's schools of thought. These two schools of thought are in line with Imam Hussein's school. Emphasis has been put on learning Martyr Soleimani's school of thought. It's important to learn about this school. And many people have emerged in this Islamic Republic, and this is an ongoing cycle. This is a cycle that generates influential figures. I can refer to our martyrs and the dedicated individuals. They have emerged in this cycle, and they have grown in this cycle. It's an intrinsic and vivid cycle, and it is improving, it is making progress. We should all know that Martyr Soleimani emerged in this system, and he describes the Islamic Republic as a holy shrine, and he grew up in such a setting, and he is also a proof of the righteousness of this Islamic establishment. That was the second point. So this is the ground for growth, and there are influential and scholarly figures who have grown in the Islamic Republic establishment. The other point is making new developments in the field. Martyr Soleimani was an outstanding figure in the field. He was a personality who carried out unique measures in the field. He created new structures in the field, and he reinforced the resistance forces, including Sunnis, Shias, Shiites, and Christians, Izadis, Lebanese, and Palestinian, and Yemenis, and Syrians, and Afghans, and Iranians. They were all working together, and his goal was to repel and combat corruption and to repel the evil. He was after creating new structures in the resistance front and create new forces in the resistance front and contribute to the steadfastness of the active forces in the field. That was actually building new structures in the resistance front. Contrary to what some said, claiming that he was after making the whole region Shia region, but he was actually seeking to eliminate and remove tyranny and remove corruption and oppression, and he wanted to combat the evil. So he supported the resistance, so the people witnessed his dedication and good deeds, and in this way he was fully supported. He wanted to remain as a revolutionary. He didn't care about the right or the left or any particular political faction. What mattered for him was the people and dedication to God and defending the homeland and the people. He was a popular figure, and he was dedicated to the people, and that was how he defined his revolutionary nature. So all people had a brotherly relationship with him, and he was the supporter of the people, and you saw the massive turnout at his funeral procession. He was an icon of solidarity. He was an icon of unity. General Soleimani was an icon of unity, and Martyr Soleimani is an icon of solidarity and unity. In the 20th century, those who wanted to think in a revolutionary manner, they just named, for example, Che Guevara as a revolutionary figure. But in the era of Imam Khomeini, the late Imam became the icon of combating oppression. And today, in the 21st century, you can name Martyr Soleimani as the icon for combating terror. Martyr Soleimani defeated the Americans and those who supported Daesh outfit. And in fact, that led to Martyr Soleimani just rejecting the myth of the invincibility of the United States. And he managed to crush the myth of the invincibility of the United States. The global arrogance and the Americans are after eliminating every nation's identity. They want to make the youths defenseless. They want to take away their weapons. And they want to actually inculcate their own identity to others. Martyr Soleimani was a personality that created the identity and at the same time revitalized the Islamic identity, not just for the Iranians, but also for the region. He created the identity. Martyr Soleimani stabilized that identity. And General Soleimani also stood strongly so that the Yemenis, the Syrians, the Afghans, the Christians, Muslims, so that they would not forget their identity. And actually, what brings about dignity for you is your identity, and such a dignity was preserved. So Martyr Soleimani preserved that identity, and today what the West is attacking today is that it seeks to eliminate identity. But Martyr Soleimani created the identity in such a way that today, despite the propaganda ballyhoo that the enemy seeks to create, so that in order to make the people just becoming shaky with respect to the Islamic Revolution ideals, you saw the massive turnout of the people at the funeral procession in the Iranian cities. And it was not limited to that year. And today, you can see that how The people have traveled to his burial place from all over Iran and the world. Is this propaganda? Or is it what God said? God tells the prophet that if you give whatever is on earth, if you give it to the people, you cannot capture the hearts. And God can capture the hearts. And today, Martyr Soleimani is in the heart of the people, and we call him the General of Hearts. You can see the manifestation of such an identity in the funeral processions on 13th of Aban. Funeral processions for those individuals who defended the country's security. These are the icons of the identity that the Iranian people can show today. The enemy wants to inculcate that the people have become shaky towards the values of the Islamic Revolution. You see, the people taking part in the funeral processions of 400 martyrs. These are the symbols of identity. This shows the people who belong to this revolution. What people are you referring to? The people are the ones who came on 13th of Aban, and the people who attended commemorative events of Sedife Tahere, and the people are the ones who have come together for this commemorative event. You had the perception that General Soleimani was dangerous. I'm telling the U.S., I'm telling the enemies of the Islamic Revolution. But General Soleimani stood in the face of your expansionism and your hegemony and your domination. He stood in the face of such expansionism and he managed to reinforce resistance in the region. Today, Martyr Soleimani, with his lofty spirit, he still continues to stand in the face of your domination and hegemony. IRGC Commander-in-Chief General Salami and Quds Force Commander General Qa'ani, on the day of Martyr Soleimani's martyrdom, they announced in this venue that the Americans must know that we will take revenge for the blood of Martyr Soleimani, and on your behalf, allow me to announce that we will never forget the blood of Martyr Soleimani, and they should know that we will take revenge for that, and in fact, we will take revenge from the perpetrators of this crime.